It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker with 27 years, 2 months, and 15 days of sobriety from Fresno. Let's give it up for Jeff.
Thank you. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm thankful to be here, and first of all, I'd like to thank Bill and Justin for asking me to come out here and speak and share my experience, strength, and hope. And my sobriety date is November 15th of 1991, and for that, I'm truly grateful. And you know, I got here on a court card, like maybe some of you did, and I got here by mistake. I wasn't meant to be here, you know, and I got here grudgingly. It was the most uncomfortable place for me to be in was a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, you know, it's pretty much the most comfortable place for me to be in. You know, I didn't know what I was doing there. I was just there to get the court card signed. I got here on back-to-back DUI, suspended license, and just the history of alcohol and substance abuse, womanizing, lying, thieving, cheating, everything that came with it, man. And see, the right haircut, the right woman, the right job, the right set of jewelry, the right lean in the car, the right tennis shoes never worked, man. But I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's just something here that I fought, but there was just something there for me, man. Everything good in my life, I always fought. My wants and my desires have always got me in trouble, man. And like I said, I was just here to make that guest appearance one more time like I did, and everything I did, whether it was the job, whether it was in the Marine Corps, whether it was in a relationship or whatever it was, I'd make that guest appearance and I'd slowly disappear, man. And you know, I'd go to the ODAC club to get the court card signed, and back then if you were 5 minutes late, they'd tell you they weren't signing your court card. And the ODAC club, you gotta remember, is on First and Tulare on the south side of town. I was in there with the biggest gangsters, pimps, whores, gangbangers there was. They were all there in that meeting, man. And I didn't know what they were doing there. And because, you know, I was still judging. You know, I'd come into the meeting of AA, and I could scan the room and tell you something bad about every one of you and never say a word to you. And today, you know, I can walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and look at every one of you and think of something good about you or say something good about you or say a little prayer for you, man. So I don't know where you've been at or where you're going or how you're doing until you speak up. You know, my first sponsor taught me about participating in my own recovery. And, you know, Justin said, I got, you know, 27 years, 2 months, and 15 days. And if you woke up at 6 in the morning and I woke up at 7 this morning, you don't got more time than I do. You know, I know that's a big little cliche that's going around in my home group in Fresno and other places, but you don't have a lot more time than I do. If you got that 16th day and years above me, you got more time than I do. And if you don't have more time than I do, I respect that just as much as the amount of time the man that has more time than I do or the woman that has more time than I do. You know, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was a broken man. You know, I had no direction. And, you know, too, I'd like to welcome the newcomers before I get going. You know, you are the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And these old timers that are sitting around here are the heart. And together as we, it's a we program. It's just one alcoholic helping another, man. And if time ain't shit, why is everyone trying to get some? Because it changes our life, man. You know, and I'm glad for the time that I have, and I'm glad that I earned my time, because I never earned nothing until I got to AA. I always took the easy way out, man. I always wanted everything to come easy to me, man. You know, I'm a product of a military family, 7 kids. I came from tough love. Everything was tough. Tough talk, tough love. And that's how I was raised, and that's how I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. But see, on the inside, I was broken, man. I was broken, but I could never tell another man, much less a woman, how I felt inside. And, you know, like I was talking about my first sponsor, Rotten Ron. You know, Rotten Ron was about 6'4", and he'd walk into the meetings, and he would come in and cuss everybody out and say things, and I'd think, man, this dude's crazy. You know, and he'd walk in the rooms, and I'd think, man, not this asshole again. You know, and then I realized and I heard that this guy was one of the biggest DUI defense attorneys in the state. So my manipulating mind started running, thinking I'm going to need that guy. And as my date for the court started getting closer, I started paying a little bit more attention to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked up to Rotten Ron and I said, hey, I introduced myself. And he just looked at me and I said, hey, can I get your phone number? And he wrote his phone number down and threw it at me. And he says, that's the quickest way to get rid of somebody is giving their phone number. You never call me. And I started calling this guy. It was just something about this guy, you know, that I liked. And he's a little edgy, and I started calling him, and he started taking me to meetings, and that court day came, and the next thing you know, he's telling me I'm getting into a program. And thank God at that time, the VA hospital had an inpatient program. And before that, you know, there's seven kids in my family, man. And a week before I went into the program, you know, I called a family meeting, and all my brothers and sisters and my mom and dad were there, and I told them, you know, started telling them what was going on, that I'm checking into a program, and I need some help, and they were just looking at me stone-faced, and then they got their turn to talk, and they all went down the line, you know. My brother telling me, you know, the last 2 years, every time I saw you come into a bar, or I saw you coming in to a party, I'd go out the back door, I wanted nothing to do with you. And my sister told me, you know, every time my phone rang after 11 o'clock, we thought it was another phone call coming that you're going to be dead, or you got in another car accident, or something you did stupid, or you're in jail. You know, and I'm thinking, what a bunch of ruthless SOBs talking to me like that, man. You know, but I didn't know about the damage I did to them. And 2 years prior to that, 2 years before I got sober, I went head on with the semi. And I was in a wheelchair for about a year and a half. And but you could find me every Friday and Saturday night at El Torito, Club Paradise, all these bars, in my wheelchair, popping pain pills, snorting cocaine, and drinking and having a good old time. Nothing stopped me from drinking, so I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Nothing ever worked, except you people. You know, and Rod and Ron told me, you know, you're going to get into the VA hospital, and we'll go from there, you know. And I realized something right before I went into the VA hospital. It was going to be Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. So I asked Ron, you know, what's my family going to do without me? He didn't hesitate 1 second. He just looked straight at me and said, the same damn thing they do every year, Jeff. They're going to live their life. Because I guarantee you, at Thanksgiving, you didn't want to be around them, and they surely didn't want to be around you. And I guarantee you, at Christmas, you brought no Christmas gifts, but you were there to get some, weren't you? And let's not start talking about New Year's, because I guarantee you weren't around your family at New Year's. So get your ass up and get into the VA hospital, you know. And I got there, you know. And I got into detox, and I got onto the fourth floor. And I saw these guys hugging each other. And I'm thinking to myself, man, you never catch me hugging another man. You never see me telling somebody that I love them, you know. And everything I said that I never would do in Alcoholics Anonymous when I first got here, I'd done to stay here, man. We give it away to keep it, and we hurt in order to grow, man. We never say no. We never look down on another alcoholic unless we're helping them up, I've learned here, man. You know, and I got into the VA hospital, and there's a section in the book in acceptance, and it talks about others judge me by my actions. Well, I've always judged myself by my intentions. And my intentions and actions have always been two different things, man. I never knew how to fully surrender. I never knew fully how to reach out the hand and be a true friend, so I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in me, but I just didn't know how to maintain these relationships. My longest relationship with anything besides my family has been being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. See, because when I got here, the old-timers told me, man, you don't miss a meeting. One meeting a day, two meetings a day, three meetings a day, man. You know, whatever it takes to stay sober, Jeff, you got to participate in your own recovery. And that's one thing Rod and Ron did to me, too, man. You know, I was at a meeting, and they'd call on me, and I'd tell them, no, thank you, I don't got nothing to share today. And during this meeting, Rod and Ron stood up and walked right up behind me, and he says, I guarantee you, if that was a crack pipe or if that was a drink, you wouldn't be saying no, thank you. So I suggest you start participating in your own recovery. So when I got here, man, these old-timers weren't as friendly. There was no phone list. They told you to get your butt up and go get a phone number. If you want that guy to be your sponsor, that woman to be your sponsor, you get your ass up and go ask him for the phone number, man. There's no gray area in Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's a lot of gray area out there, man. There's no gray area in here. We just don't drink no matter what. And that's the people I choose to look at, man. And when I got here, if you had more time than you, I hated your guts, man. I didn't like you. I didn't really like anybody because I didn't like myself, man. You know, and they say this disease is cunning and baffling, you know. I get paid on Friday, spend my whole paycheck on Friday, and wake up Saturday, you know, going through my pockets, asking God, let there be one $100 bill or one $20 bill in this rolled up, crumbled up wad of money. And then telling myself I'll never drink again or I'll never do it again. And by 2 o'clock, that thought starts to evaporate, saying, just one, Jeff. Maybe just one. Maybe just two. And then it was on again. And then I'd call the lady I was dating on Monday and telling her how much I loved her because my car payment and rent was due. That's the type of pig I was when I got here, but I couldn't tell you that. I couldn't tell you what I was about, but I could tell you what you were doing. I could never look at me, but I could always look at you, man. I had the inability to examine myself, so I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. There's people that laid, you know, the road out, the steps, the footsteps here for me. People like Bernard and Woody and Tomas and my new sponsor Mike over there. You know, there that table sitting right there from Fresno, we have over 127 years of sobriety sitting right there, man. You know? And I was at a new meeting today at the Lano Club, and I was looking around the room, and there was over 400 years of sobriety sitting in that room, man. And so that's telling me something, man. You know, and they talk about, would you rather look good? Would you rather feel good? Shit, when I got here, I'd rather look good. I don't know about feeling good, you know. Would you rather be right? Would you rather feel right? I'd rather be right. Because I stayed here, I've learned I'd rather feel good and I'd rather feel right. Sometimes it's addiction by subtraction. You know, and I got into the VA, like I said, and I got out of the VA hospital. And I think I was still on Social Security disability. And I got this letter saying I had to go see this doctor. And I went to see the doctor, and I was still lying and manipulating. And I think I went in there with crutches and or a cane, and he had me do this test and said, you'll get a letter. I got a letter, and it said, you know, your Social Security ends in 3 months. So, you know, I started panicking a little bit and called up Ron, and, you know, and he says, you know, there's a school right down the street. You need to get a job. And, you know, my first job in Alcoholics Anonymous was cleaning toilets, man. And I cleaned the best damn toilet in Fresno, man, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Because you people gave me some pride and gave me some dignity that I never had, man. By just telling me and helping me work the steps, you know. Coming to meetings, working with others, picking up cigarette butts, pouring coffee, listening to these old-timers on my ass all the time, man. Because, you know, when I got here, you know, when I first got here, I couldn't share. And then when I shared, I'd look straight up in the air and I'd share. And then when I started catching this program, I had a real foul mouth. Every other word was F you could suck this, and I hate you people. And some people asked me to keep coming back, and some asked me never come back to the meeting, man. You know, in that first home group that I went to because of my foul mouth, I got kicked out of there for 6 months. And I'm talking that was the lowest life program, AA meeting in Fresno, man. It was the worst of the worst, people say. And they kicked me out because of my mouth, man. So I had to start making some changes, man. And these old-timers that weren't budging or weren't changing for me were showing me how to work this program, were teaching me how to work this program and teaching me about life, man. I didn't know that then, man. They were setting my standard. They were showing me a way of life, man, about the surrenders here, man. You know, my first surrender was to the alcohol and to the drugs. And there's a couple of surrenders after that, man. And, you know, like I said, that self-examination is one of the toughest things, you know, that I had to learn how to do is take a look at myself instead of looking at everybody else, man. What's my part in it? Or have I done something wrong, you know? So, you know, Rotten Ron told me to get a job and told me to go to school, and I started going to school. And, you know, I got involved with being a student senator, and then I got voted to be a student body president at Fresno City College. And there's a man in here, and his wife is in the program, and I hated her, man. Her and I would battle back and forth, and I was never good enough. I was never good enough to reach the top. And this lady, she walks in and she's sitting at a meeting and I'm probably rolling my eyes, saying a few nice words about her and thinking some bad stuff, and she starts sharing. And she says, you know, if you got a goal, don't settle for second best. Go for the top. And she was talking to me that day, man. So I turned around, instead of running for vice president, I became student body president because someone in Alcoholics Anonymous was just sharing about their life and just sharing in general, man. And I became student body president, you know, and I started working with kids and I had my own program called The Choice. And through The Choice, we got national recognition. In year four, you know, I got to celebrate my fourth year birthday in Washington, D.C. because I got an internship. And I worked out of the White House at that time in 1994. I served under President Clinton out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which advised Clinton on illicit drug use. And I got there, man, you know, and by then, you know, I AA was my life, man. Today, AA isn't my whole life, but it's part of my whole life. When I first got sober, AA was my whole life, man. And I carried the message, and if you didn't believe in AA, you know, I would tell you about AA. I didn't know anything about anonymity. You know, I would say, hey, I'll see you at that meeting over there, and then I see you over here, and then, you know, later on during, you know, my sobriety, I got this job I always wanted. And they said, you know what, tomorrow we want you to come back. It's graduation day. We want you to come back. 8-week course. We want you to come back and talk about what's the most significant, biggest significant change, life-changing thing in your life. So I went in there, and I turned it into a speaker meeting. Everybody sat back and they were looking at me. Didn't know what to say. About 2 weeks later, I got this little pink slip telling me they no longer needed my services. And I learned about anonymity real quick, man. So I learned about those things, man, the hard way sometimes, you know, and I learned that. So, you know, I went back east and Ron, you know, back then, you know, we didn't have the phones or anything. We had Atlas, and he meets me at the airport, and I got about 6 Atlas, and he says, here's for Canada in case the plane gets hijacked there. Because I got some meetings written here in case you're now, you know, making a joke out of it. And, you know, but I knew when I get there, I better get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And that's the first thing I did when I got there, man. I called their central office and found out where meetings were, you know. And my first day going to the White House, you know, I get there and I come up against the plexiglass window. Secret Service is sitting right there. And walk in and dude's looking at me and he nods back and I give him my ID and tell him what I'm there for. And two other guys come down and they start giving me the rundown, and still in my mind I'm thinking, man, I don't deserve to be here, man. I know they're going to find something, they're going to send me home. And the first thing out of the guy's mouth, he gives me this badge. He says, you lose this badge, you're going to go home, so don't lose it. I said, all right. 12 o'clock comes around, jump in a cab, found the meeting in DuPont Circle. It's about 3 miles away. Get to the AA meeting, it's 12, you know, we do the seventh tradition, and it comes to me, the basket comes to me, and I go to pull out my wallet, I can't find my wallet. And I'm thinking, okay, I threw it away in the trash can over here with my lunch, so I go through the trash, can't find it, start panicking a little bit, walk out the front door, I realize I left it in the cab. And so one cab company comes by, and I think, that's the cab company. Another cab company comes by, no, it was that cab company. So all these cabs are driving by, I'm getting confused, you know. And I'm thinking, shit, I'm done now, you know. So I had to walk all the way back to the White House. I get there and walk up. The same guy's right there at the plexiglass. I nod, he nods. He says, where's your badge at? And I said, I lost it. So he picks up the phone, he calls these guys. These guys come down, they're looking at me, and so where's your badge at? I said, I lost my badge, I lost my wallet. And they're like, you know you're going home, right? I said, yep. The guy said, just kidding, come on in. So come in. And about 4 o'clock that afternoon, it's 3 hours difference from California to the East Coast, my mom calls me. And she says, Jeffrey, did you lose your wallet today? I said, yeah, I lost my wallet today. And she says, well, the cab driver called, and he says he's got your wallet. He says he's never seen nothing like this ever in his entire life, driving cabs for over 22 years. Two cabbies got in his cab after you did, and your wallet sat right there in the back seat. He's never seen nothing like it, man. And to me, you know, that was God telling me that I'm doing the right thing, man. But you know what? I got a shot here in life. I didn't know it then, but he was sending this little message that everything's going to be okay. Everything, all my worries and all my fears were going to be erased if I continue to stay sober and I continue to give it away to keep it and continue to work with other alcoholics, man. So I met this cab driver, you know, and I'm a starving college student. I had like $500 in there. Everything was sitting there. And I said, here, you can have the money. He says, nope, I just want to give you your wallet. And he proceeded to tell me the story again that my mom told me, you know. I went on about living life, you know, and I got to do a lot of things. I got to see how all the drug cartels were tracked. I got to see grassroots programs like the one that I ran. And right before I left, you know, because my boss said on Clinton's cabinet, I got to go to the Christmas tree lighting. And he gives me these tickets, and he says, go to the Christmas tree lighting. So I get there, and I start walking down the rows, and Secret Service is stopping everybody. I flip my badge out and I keep walking. I get to the second row and I'm looking. It's just starting to snow. The snowflakes are coming down. It's starting to get dark. And I said, man, if this Kathy Lee Crosby or whatever name comes out and sing this song, I'm going to lose it. She came out, started singing that song. I started crying like a baby, man. And all these people sitting there were, are you okay? What's the matter with you? I said, you know, you wouldn't understand, man. That was always my favorite line to my family and friends and people. And I got in trouble. What's the matter with you, Jeff? Oh, you wouldn't understand. And I got here to AA and I told them you wouldn't understand. They told me, yeah, we understand. You're just full of shit. You know? And I left there and, my life started changing more and more, man. I started learning about I'm not the most important person in this room. The newcomer is, man. Newcomer, because we got to set the example, man. I didn't understand all that because I was just fighting to stay sober. I didn't understand about people going out and having drinks and was I next, you know? And, my second sponsor, you know, we were eating breakfast one morning and I think I had about seven years for, well, maybe less than that. And people were relapsing. People all around me were relapsing. My friends, people I got sober with, they're all falling off. I didn't understand what was going on. I'm just thinking in my mind, the me conversations that I'm next. And I told Paul, I said, you know, Paul, I don't understand why these people are going out and drinking and using, what's going on. And we're eating breakfast and he looks up at me and he says, you know these people relapsing over alcohol and drugs? I said, yeah. He said, that's like you relapsing over women. I can understand that real quick, man. He talked to me in my terms, and he talked to me about things in life, and that's what we do here. We give it away to keep it. And then things these old-timers taught me about coming to meetings no matter what, man. We don't drink no matter what. Finance, romance, resentments, hatefulness, I don't want to come to that meeting. There's common threads in people that go out and relapse, man. And I look at that, but I also look at the common thread in these old-timers that continue to stay sober and come back in the meetings, man, one day at a time. And I choose to follow the old-timers, man. And as I get more time, you know, I learn that my life's not going to be perfect, man, that things happen. You know, I got a 17-year-old kid, 17 and a half years old, that I haven't put my hands on yet, as I say, you know. And I love this kid because Alcoholics Anonymous people in AA taught me about love. When I first got here, you know, people would tell me they'd love me and I'd be MFing under my breath and they'd come up and hug me and I'd stand there like a wet noodle because I didn't know how to hug. And all of a sudden, you know, like I said, I started staying sober and started telling people that we love each other. And where I come from in my family, we very seldom told each other we loved each other. And when I started telling my family over the phone when I'd see them, I loved them. They did the same thing I did. You know, on the phone, it'd be silence. And they'd hang up. You know? And after a couple years of doing that, they started telling me they loved me back, man. And my brother, man, you know, he's one of these gym rat guys. Pretty big dude. One day I'm riding my bike and pedaling down the street. He's over at Gold's Gym, so I decided to go say hello to him. So I walk in, and he's all, him and his buddies are all standing there looking at me, and I walk up. And I give them a hug and tell them I love them. And they're all standing there looking at me. And they're looking at my brother. And they're looking at me going, what the F just happened here, man? You know, I got my bike and took off, man. And that's what AA's taught me, man. And that love that I've learned there makes me a softer man. You know, the longer I stay here, the softer I become. Because when I got here, like I said, everything was hard. Everything was tough love, you know. And I got my, I've had a total of four DUIs. And after I got my first DUI, right when I first came out of the Marine Corps, the lady stood up in class at the end of the class and she said, 90% of you people will be back in this class. And I was probably like 100% of the people in there going, it's not going to be me. And it was me, man. You know, I couldn't maintain a lot of things. Like I said, I got in a car accident, but I found time to party. And when I got sober, I didn't have a license, and Ron knew that. So I rode a bike for a year and a half all over Fresno, man. I lived in a 1040 house, halfway house. I did what was suggested to me, man. There's no light at the end of the tunnel when I first got here, and I realized that through sobriety, I can make my own light. I could do the things that I always wanted to do because I wasn't drinking and using, man. It's just a simple fact. You know, and I got, like I said, I got a little bit of time, and I started working with others. I got a job, and, you know, but I always remember what these old-timers taught me. It doesn't matter how much time you got, your ass better be in the meeting, man. All the money in the world can't keep me sober, but it can sure get me drunk, man. So, you know, Ron taught me about, you know, if you want that fine woman, go get her. If you want that job over there, go get it. You want to make all the money in the world? Go do it. You want that material things over there? Go get it. But don't make it your higher power, man. All those things go fine with the meetings, Jeff. And meetings aren't everything. Meetings have taught me about foundations of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's built my foundation, being in meetings on a daily basis, almost on a daily basis, man. And I understand that, you know what, meetings aren't everything. But it's a big part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's like the other day I had a kid with me that's got 101 days, Little Paul, as we call him now. That's his nickname, but he's actually a big kid. We call him Little Paul, you know. And we were there, and I got a phone call in 12-step. I don't hear about 12-step calls very often anymore. And he got to go the chance to go on a 12-step call. And I think it was his 90 days. It was 90 days that day. It was 89th day that day, and he went on a 12-step call. We were there for 5 hours from the time we started to the time we got the student in the cap, but he chose to go out that night. He left 4 hours later. He didn't stay sober, but I did. He didn't stay sober, but Paul has. You know, and that's how this program works. You go out and have a drink, better you than me. I go out and have a drink, better me than you. And I know that's part of the ruthless part of this program, or the selfish part. But I have to be aware of that. I'm just one drink away, man. Doesn't matter how much time I have. The drink hides behind a man, a woman, a job, disappointment, success, failure. If I want to drink, I'm going to drink. I got a slippery face, and anywhere I go becomes a slippery place, man. And I have to be aware of the things that I do and what's going on in my life. You know, like I said, I got this kid that's 17 and a half years old. And I love this kid, and I wish I could love that kid. I wish I could love everybody like I love that kid, man. And you know, through sponsorship and the people that sponsored me, they've taught me how to live my life, man. You know, I've got four people I sponsor today, you know, and sponsorship to me is an important thing. So if you're new, I just want to suggest that you get a sponsor. We don't tell you what to do here. It's a program of suggestions, man. And I suggest you get a sponsor. And you build that relationship, or I had to build that relationship with my sponsors. My first one chose to go out and drink Old Duels at year four. And I remember when I first got to AA, I asked him, can we drink Old Duels? And he says, if you drink Old Duels, you might as well go out and have a drink. And year four, his daughter's wedding, him and a couple other people that are still around that claimed their time were over there drinking Old Duels. And I saw him over there drinking, and he walks over, and he opens it up and sets it down right in front of me, and he says, here, drink it. So I'm not drinking that. He goes, no, I'm your sponsor. I'm telling you, go ahead and drink it. I'm not drinking it. And I knew immediately that, you know what, it was time to get another sponsor, man. And I got the second one that I had for over 20 years, and he forgot about the program. He's forgetting about the program, not going to meetings, not doing what's suggested, and saying, you know, all the meetings that he went to is like money in the bank. That money's cashed every day, baby. I've learned that here. It's one meeting a day, you know. And as you get older, and I understand the time, and as we age, it may not be every day, But if you haven't gone to mayor more than 10 meetings in 7 years, you know, I had to make a change, man. I called the guy that I got today last week, and he's talking about, he's reading the big book, talking about he's looking at the sixth step today, and starts talking to me about the sixth step. I need to be reminded. I need to understand that, you know what, this disease is cunning, and it's baffling, and it's just waiting for me, you know. And, you know, when I got here, you know, I'm 57 years old. I'll be 57 in April, man. I didn't plan to live till I thought 39 was my due date. I thought I'd be dead by the age of 39, man. And I lost my train of thought. It's telling you I'm getting a little bit older, you know. And, you know, I got here, and my life has changed because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I know, you know, I'm aging because of my forgetfulness, you know, of what's going on, like just losing my train of thought here. You know, I got here, and, you know, like I said earlier, I didn't plan on staying here. But I'm glad that I have stayed here, man. I'm glad that I've joined you people. I'm glad that I've got people in my life that are alcoholics that show me how to live this way of life. You know, I got a guy sponsored, Bank Robber Mike, over here, and he ever speaks here, you'll find out why that's his name. You know, it has something to do with taking money out of banks that he didn't have money in. He just borrowed it for a while, you know. And, you know, this guy, at times, I got to talk to him about taking that S off his chest, man. He wants to help everybody and everything, you know, so I got to slow him down. And then he shows me that I got to speed it up. I got to do things for others and continue to give it away. We all work together here, man. You know, and when I got here, my relationships with women were terrible, man. If my woman wasn't calling me a bastard 20 times a week, and I wasn't calling her a bitch 20 times a week, and she wasn't trying to run me over into Chico's parking lot, then we didn't love each other. That was love when I got here, man. You know, and I didn't know how to be honest with people, man. I didn't know how to be honest with the woman. I couldn't share how I felt inside, man. I couldn't tell anybody, like I said earlier, that I was lonely when I got here. When I got here, my daily companions were self-pity and self-doubt, man. And, you know, I lived in this apartment, and my daily reprieve of making myself feel good was to walk across the street to 7-Eleven and get in a big gulp and a big bag of Cheetos and turn it on the TV and start arguing with Oprah Winfrey, the Phil Donahue show, cussing at the news, getting drunk, and then waiting till about midnight or 2 in the morning to walk out to get my mail, man. I was afraid to go out and get my mail. The mailman would throw my mail on my porch and I'd leave a note, "Are you dead?" And I'd walk out to this mailbox once a month, and I'd stick my hands in that little brown mailbox, and I'd walk over to the Dipsy dumpster, and I'd dump all that mail in the trash. I was in fear of everything, man. I was in fear of change. I was in fear of success. I was in fear of failing. You know, and AA's changed that for me, man. AA's given me a life that I never dreamed of, that I could never thought I'd have. I thought I'd be in Social Security disability the rest of my life, that I wouldn't be doing anything for anybody, man. I never thought I'd be a father. You know, I had my first child, my only child, at the age of 39, you know. And I raised his sisters, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they wrote me this letter. And they call me Dad today. And their kids are my grandkids, and they call me Grandpa, man. It's not too bad for a guy that always thought he'd be the uncle, man. You know, and my family life has come together. We still go at it with my family. You know, I had a sister that committed suicide about 4 years ago. I found her body that night, or six days later, they said. I didn't go have a drink over that, man. I've had 7 surgeries in 15 months. Because some ailments from the Marine Corps, I'm going to go have a drink over that, and I won't have a drink over it. Why me? Why not me? We all go through our shit, man, but we trudge it together. It's just one alcoholic helping another, man, as we trudge this road of happy destiny, man. And, you know, as I get softer in this program, I understand with these old-timers like Bernard and Tomas and the Easy Does It, and how other people have taken my place, you know, like when I quit cussing in AA, when my foul mouth started, you know, kind of evaporating. I didn't understand. I didn't know how AA would live without me, man.
you know? And I didn't know how, you know, just like my past girlfriends, how they'd live without me, man. You know? And they're living fine just without me because they went on married other people. Someone's driving my repossessed car. Someone's taking my place with all my ex-girlfriends, man. There's a solution to every problem here. And I talk about there's a screw to fit every nut that walks in here. You know, there's no guards at the door that's saying, hey, you can't come in here, you're too rotten. Or you can't come in here, you're not rotten enough, man. It's a we program, no matter what you got, or if you got some time, or, you know, the man with one day can help the man with 38 years or 40 years, man, I've learned here, man. It's a we program. You know, as I continue to trudge this road of happy destiny, like I was saying, you know, as I sit back and I go to meetings and I start doing with these old-timers that I used to despise and hate, you know, they start talking about the program, man. When I got here, I was talking about my drunken logs. Everything's about my drunken log, man. I didn't understand the language of the heart, man. And through the language of the heart, I've learned to love, man. And you know, they say love always wins, no matter what. You know, and, you know, I'm at my home group some days, and I see the stuff that's going on there. I see the changes in AA. Just like when I got here, you know, there were some changes going on, and I see the changes, and I got to roll with the punches. But there's some punches I don't roll with. You know? I don't roll with a newcomer disrespecting the old timer. I don't roll with giving a phone list and giving the newcomer the phone number, man. Like I said earlier, get your ass up and go get the phone number, man. I don't roll with the guy that sits there and talks about how much time he has or how long he's been around the program, not in the program. You know, I've been around people talk about, I've been around AA 30 years. You know, how much clean time you got? About 2 months? Thank you. You know? I'd rather go to the man, you know, like I said earlier, if time ain't shit, why is everyone trying to get some? I'd rather go to the man that's had years of sobriety or a few years of sobriety or a year and a half of sobriety versus the man that continues to relapse year in, year out, over and over and over, and expecting the same results. To get an answer, an honest answer from this guy over here, man. We don't look down at the people that go out. This disease is kind of baffling. I understand that. But I also understand I got to want to stay sober more than I want to get drunk, you know. And you know, my life, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've had my ups and downs, you know. And like Tomas talks about, when I was drinking and using, I had a lot of ups and downs on the way down. And now that I quit drinking and using, I got a lot of ups and downs on the way up. You know, and these things that these people have taught me in AA, you people have educated me more than the school down the street in Fresno ever gave me an education on. You taught me about life and people and love and understanding and having empathy for people. But our job here is to help each other stay sober. And you've also taught me how to be direct and to the point. You've also taught me how to confront. There used to be a big biker that was from Fresno. I mean, he's from Fresno, but he's originally from Visalia, Woody. And Woody brought me to my first couple meetings here in Visalia when I was doing some business out here. And I remember I had about 90 days, you know, and Woody was the ex-Hell's Angel, and he had arms bigger than four of us put together in here, and he talked loud. And he talked about God a lot, and he talked about shitting and pissing his pants one time. I'm thinking, what's that got to do with AA? And then I remember two weeks later, I'm driving down the street going to a meeting, and I'm thinking, shit. I remember when I shit and pissed in my pants, but I'm not going to tell them people about that, you know? So Woody and people like him, you know, set the stage. He would talk about, you know, temporarily out of order, like the old Coke machine. How they take that old sign and put it out and wrap it around the machine and temporarily out of order, man. When I got here, I was having a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, a bad year, and a bad life. And today, you know, I still got some bad hours, man. But I don't got bad weeks and bad days anymore. I haven't worked hard enough to get the bad moments. And by working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and getting a sponsor and bringing privilege to sponsor the people that asked me to be their sponsor and working with them and the guys that got some time that I let run, and when they got issues, they call me. I don't need to be in their business all the time. I just can give just suggestions, man. We pray together. We laugh together. We cry together, man. And we stay sober together. And you know, for me, I wouldn't have it any other way, man. I got a life here, like I said, that I never dreamed of. I never thought of. I can have an open line of communication. All my ex-girlfriends like me today, you know. And they told me, you know, if you got a drinking problem, man, quit drinking. If you got a living life problem, you're in the right place, Jeff. And I got a living life problem, man. All my problems have always come from my wants and my desires, man. My emotional wants and desires, you know. And I remember I had about 10 years. And at that time, I carried a badge. And I was going through child custody. And I went to pick up my son. We went through all the court, got all everything my way. This is your time. Boom, boom, boom. I had my court papers with me. Went to pick them up. She said, you're not taking them. I said, no, it says it right here. Court papers, it's my day. I'm taking them. Boom, boom, boom. She threw a punch, hit me. She called the cops. So I sat there. I knew not to leave because of what I was doing. Had my court papers. The cops get there, and I'm telling them, it's my day. So they called the supervisor, and he comes, and he talks to her, talks to me. I go, it's my day right here. And he took them court papers, crumbled them up, stuffed them in my pocket, cuffed me up, and took me to jail, man. And I learned, or I became aware at that time about making my choices off my emotions and my wants and my desires, man. So today, if I happen to go pick up my 17-and-a-half-year-old kid, and she says, you're not taking him, I just tell her, have a good day. I get in my car and I leave, man. I don't always got to be right, man. I don't always got to get my way. But these are things, this is my journey. My White House may be maybe you getting your wife back, your kids back, getting things back that you never thought you would get, man. But it could all come true here, man, for you. It's like it's come true for me and countless others. Your life will change, man. I guarantee you. It's one thing I can guarantee. You stay sober, your life will change, and things will happen to you that you never thought would happen. And all you got to do is just give it away to keep it, man. That's all I got to do here is give it away to keep it, to help me stay sober, to help another alcoholic. If my life's, if I'm going through some shit, and I'm going through my ups and downs, my roller coasters, I'm on a dry drunk, they tell me the best thing to do is pick up the phone and call another alcoholic, man. Is to go work with another alcoholic. And I remember when I first got sober, you know, every Sunday about 5 o'clock that impending doom would come in. That big hole in my stomach would be there. And I went down my phone list and I was calling everybody. I couldn't get a hold of anybody in AA, man. My two buddies that walked me into the VA hospital aren't in this program, wanted to come over and spend the night, and that didn't help. But as soon as I heard another alcoholic's voice, everything simmered down, man. And I'm thankful for you people. I'm thankful for your sobriety, how long you've been here, what you've gone through. I may never ever see any of you again, man. But thank you for participating in my recovery tonight, and I appreciate you guys asking me to come out here and speak. Thank you.